This is Audible.
Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. presents Arthas, Rise of the Lich King by Christy Golden. Performed by the author. This book is dedicated to all the Warcraft lore lovers out there. I hope you enjoy reading this as much as I enjoyed writing it. Acknowledgements. Special thanks to Chris Metzen, yet again, for his passion for the game and its lore, and to Evelyn Fredrickson, Mickey Nielsen, Justin Parker, and Evan Crawford at Blizzard for their diligent aid and help in research. So big a book with so many details could not have been written without their cheerful and accurate help and support. Prologue. The Dreaming. The wind shrieked like a child in pain. The herd of Shoveltusks cuddled together for warmth, their thick, shaggy coats protecting them from the worst of the storm. They formed a circle with the calves shivering and bleating in the center. Their heads, each crowned with a massive antler, drooped toward the snow-covered earth, eyes shut against the whirling snow. Their own breath frosted their muzzles as they planted themselves and endured. In their various dens, the wolves and bears waited out the storms, one with the comfort of their pack, the other solitary and resigned. Whatever their hunger, nothing would drive them forth until after the keening wind had ceased its weeping and the blinding snow had worn itself out. The wind, roaring in from the ocean to beat at the village of Kamagua, tore the hides that stretched over frames made of the bones of great sea creatures. When the storm passed, the Tuskar, whose home this had been for years uncounted, knew they would need to repair or replace nets and traps. Their dwellings, sturdy though they were always harmed when this storm descended. They had all gathered inside the large group dwelling that had been dug deep into the earth, lacing the flaps tight against the storm and lighting smoky oil lamps. Elder Atuik waited in stoic silence. He had seen many of these storms over the last 7 years. Long had he lived, the length and yellowness of his tusks and the wrinkles on his brown skin testament to the fact. But these storms were more than storms, were more than natural. He glanced at the young ones, shivering not with cold, not the Tuskar, but with fear. "He dreams," one of them murmured, eyes bright, whiskers bristling.
"Silence!"
snapped Atuik, more gruffly than he had intended. The child, startled, fell silent, and once again the only sound was the aching sob of the snow and wind. It rose like the smoke, the deep bellowing noise, wordless but full of meaning, a chant carried by a dozen voices. The sounds of drums and rattles and bone striking bone formed a fierce undercurrent to the wordless call. The worst of the wind's anger was deflected from the Tonka village by the circle of posts and hides, and the lodges, their curving roofs arching over a large interior space in defiance of the hardships of this land, were strong. Over the sound of deep and ancient ritual, the wind's cry could still be heard. The dancer, a shaman by the name of Kamiku, missed a step, and his hoof struck awkwardly. He recovered and continued. Focus. It was all about focus. It was how one harnessed the elements and wrung from them obedience. It was how his people survived in a land that was harsh and unforgiving. Sweat dampened and darkened his fur as he danced. His large brown eyes were closed in concentration, his hooves again finding their powerful rhythm. He tossed his head, short horns stabbing the air, tail twitching. Others danced beside him, their body heat and that of the fire, burning brightly despite the flakes and wind drifting down from the smoke hole in the roof, kept the lodge warm and comfortable. They all knew what was transpiring outside. They could not control these winds and snow as they could ordinary such things. No, this was his doing. But they could dance and feast and laugh in defiance of the onslaught. They were Tonka. They would endure. The world was blue and white and raging outside, but inside the great hall, the air was warm and still. A fireplace tall enough for a man to stand in was filled with thick logs, the crackling of their burning the only noise. Over the ornately decorated mantel, carved with images of fantastical creatures, the giant antler of a shovel tusk was mounted. Carved dragon heads served as sconces, holding torches with flames burning bright. Heavy beams supported the feast hall that could have housed dozens, the warm orange hue of the fires chasing away the shadows to hide on the corners. The cold stone of the floor was softened and warmed by thick pelts of polar bears, shovel tusk, and other creatures. A table, long and heavy and carved, occupied most of the space in the room. It could have hosted 3 dozen easily. Only 3 figures sat at the table now. A man, an orc, and a boy. None of it was real, of course. The man who sat at the place of honor at the table, slightly elevated before the other 2 in a mammoth carved chair that was not quite a throne, understood this. He was dreaming. He had been dreaming for a long, long time. The hall, the shovel tusk trophies, the fire, the table, the orc, and the boy, all were simply a part of his dreaming. The orc, on his left, was elderly, but still powerful. The orange fire and torchlight flickered off the ghastly image he bore on his heavy-jawed face, that of a skull painted on. He had been a shaman, able to direct and wield vast powers, and even now, even just as a figment of the man's imagination, he was intimidating. The boy was not. Once he might have been a handsome child, with wide sea-green eyes, fair features, and golden hair. But once was not now. The boy was sick. He was thin, so emaciated that his bones seemed to threaten to slice through the skin. The once bright eyes were dimmed and sunken, a thin film covering them. Pustules marked his skin, bursting and oozing forth a green fluid. Breathing seemed difficult, and the child's chest hitched in little, panting gasps. The man thought he could almost see the labored thumping of a heart that should have faltered long ago, but persisted in continuing to beat. "He is still here," the orc said, stabbing a finger in the boy's direction. "He will not last," the man said. As if to confirm the words, the boy began to cough. Blood and mucus spattered the table in front of him, and he wiped a thin arm clad in rotting finery across his pale mouth. He drew breath to speak in a halting voice, the effort obviously taxing him. "You have not yet won him, and I will prove it to you." "You are as foolish as you are stubborn," the orc growled. "That battle was won long ago." The man's hands tightened on the arms of his chair as he listened to both of them. This had been a recurring dream over the last few years. He found it now more tiresome than entertaining. I grow weary of the struggle. Let us end this once and for all. The orc leered at the boy, his skull face grinning hideously. The boy coughed again, but did not quail from the orc's regard. Slowly, with dignity, he straightened, his milky eyes darting from the orc to the man. Yes, the orc said, this serves nothing. Soon it will be time to awaken, and move forward into this world once more. He turned to the man, his eyes gleaming. Walk again the path you have taken. The skull seemed to detach itself from his face, hovering above it like another entity, and the room changed with its movement. The carved sconces that a moment before were simple wooden dragons undulated and rippled, coming to life, the torches in their mouths flaring and casting grotesque, dancing shadows as they shook their heads. The wind screamed outside, and the door to the hall slammed open. Snow whirled about the three figures. The man spread his arms and let the freezing wind wrap about him like a cloak. The orc laughed, the skull floating over his face, issuing its own manic peals of mirth. Let me show you that your destiny lies with me, and you can only know true power through eliminating him. The boy, fragile and slight, had been knocked out of his chair by the violent gusts of frigid air. Now he propped himself up with an effort, shaking, his breaths coming in small puffs as he struggled to climb back into his chair. He threw the man a look of hope, fear, and odd determination. All is not lost, he whispered, and somehow, despite the orc and the skull's laughter, despite the shrieking of the wind, the man heard him. Part 1. The Golden Boy. Chapter 1.
Hold her head! That's it, lad!
The mare, her normally white coat gray with sweat, rolled her eyes and whickered. Prince Arthas Menethil, only son to King Taranis Menethil II, one day to rule the kingdom of Lordaeron, held fast to the bridle and murmured soothingly. The horse jerked her head violently and almost took the 9-year-old with her.
Whoa, Brightmane, Arthas said. Easy, girl. It'll be all right. Nothing to worry about.
Joram Balnir grunted in amusement.
Doubt you'd feel that way if something the size of this foal was coming out of you, lad.
His son Jerem, crouching beside his father and the prince, laughed, and so did Arthas, giggling uncontrollably, even as hot and soggy foam from Brightmane's champing mouth dropped onto his leg.
One more push, girl, Balnir said, moving slowly along the horse's body to where the foal, encased in a shiny, shroud-like membrane, was halfway through its journey into the world.
Arthas wasn't really supposed to be here, but when he had no lessons, he often sneaked away to the Balnir farmstead to admire the horses Balnir was known for breeding and to play with his friend Jerem. Both youths were well aware that a horse breeder's son, even one whose animals were regularly bought as mounts for the royal household, was not a proper companion for a prince. Neither cared much, and thus far none of the adults had put a halt to the friendship. And so it was that he had been here, building forts, throwing snowballs, and playing guards and bandits with Jerem, when Joram had called to the boys to come watch the miracle of birth. The miracle of birth was actually pretty disgusting, Arthas thought. He hadn't realized there'd be so much goo involved. Brightmane grunted and heaved again, her legs held stiff and straight out, and with a sloshy, wet sound, her baby entered the world. Her heavy head thumped down into Arthas's lap, and she closed her eyes for a moment. Her sides heaved as she caught her breath. The boy smiled, stroking the damp neck and thick, rough mane, and looked over to where Jerem and his father were attending to the foal. It was chilly in the stables at this time of year, and steam rose faintly from its warm, wet body. With a towel and dry hay, father and son rubbed off the last of the foal's unsettling shroud-like covering, and Arthas felt his face stretching in a grin. Damp, gray, all long, tangled legs and big eyes, the foal looked around, blinking in the dim lantern light. Those large brown eyes locked with Arthas's. "You're beautiful," Arthas thought, his breath stopping for a moment, and realized that the much-touted miracle of birth really was pretty miraculous. Brightmane began to struggle to her feet. Arthas leaped to his own and pressed back against the wooden walls of the stable so the great animal could turn around without crushing him. Mother and newborn sniffed each other. Then Brightmane grunted and began to bathe her son with her long tongue.
"Hey, lad, you're a bit worse for wear," said Jerem.
Arthas looked down at himself and his heart sank. He was covered in straw and horse spittle. Arthas shrugged.
"Maybe I should jump into a snowbank on my way back to the palace," he offered, grinning.
Sobering slightly, he said,
"Don't worry. I'm 9 years old now. I'm no longer a baby. I can go where I..."
There was a squawking of chickens and the sound of a man's booming voice, and Arthas's face fell. He squared his small shoulders, made an intense but ultimately ineffectual attempt at brushing off the straw, and strode out of the barn.
"Sir Uther," he said, in his best, "I am the prince and you had best remember it" voice, "these people have been kind to me. I pray you, don't go trampling their poultry. Or their snapdragon beds," he thought, glancing over at the snow-covered piles of raised earth, where the beautiful blooming flowers that were Vera Balnir's pride and joy would burst forth in a few short months. He heard Jerem and Jerem follow him out from the barn, but did not glance behind him, instead regarding the mounted knight, fully clad in
armor, Arthas gasped. "What's happened?"
"I'll explain on the way," Uther said grimly. "I'll send someone back for your horse, Prince Arthas. Steadfast can travel faster even with two." He reached down, a large hand closing on Arthas's arm, and swung the boy up in front of him as if he weighed nothing at all. Vera had come out of the house at the sound of a horse approaching at full gallop. She was wiping her hands off on a towel and had a smudge of flour on her nose. Her blue eyes were wide, and she looked over at her husband worriedly. Uther nodded politely to her.
"We'll discuss this later," Uther said.
"Ma'am." He touched his forehead with a mailed hand in courteous salute, then kicked his horse Steadfast, armored as his rider was, and the beast leaped into action. Uther's arm was like a band of steel around Arthas's midsection. Fear bubbled up inside the boy, but he pushed it down even as he pushed on Uther's arm.
"I know how to ride," he said, his petulance covering up his worry. "Tell me what is going on."
"A rider from South Shore has come and gone. He brings ill news. A few days ago, hundreds of small boats, filled with refugees from Stormwind, landed on our shores," Uther said. He did not remove his arm. Arthas gave up that particular struggle and craned his neck, listening intently, his sea-green eyes wide and fastened on Uther's grim face.
"Stormwind has fallen."
"What? Stormwind? How? To who? What?"
"We'll find all that out shortly. The survivors, including Prince Varian, are being led by Stormwind's one-time champion, Lord Anduin Lothar. He, Prince Varian, and the others will be coming to Capital City in a few days. Lothar has warned us he bears alarming news, obvious enough if something has destroyed Stormwind. I was sent to find you and bring you back. You've no business playing with the common folk at this moment."
Stunned, Arthas turned and faced forward again, his hands gripping Steadfast's mane. Stormwind. He had never been there, but had heard tales about it. It was a mighty place, with great stone walls and beautiful buildings. It had been built with sturdiness in mind, to withstand the buffeting of the fierce winds from which it had taken its name. To think that it had fallen. Who or what could be strong enough to take such a city?
How many people came with them? He asked, pitching his voice louder than he really wished to in order to be heard over the drumming of the horses' hooves as they headed back toward the city.
Unknown. Not a small number, that much is certain. The messenger said it was everyone who had survived.
Survived what?
And Prince Varian? He'd heard of Varian all his life, of course, just as he knew all the names of the neighboring kings, queens, princes, and princesses. Suddenly, his eyes widened. Uther had mentioned Varian, but not the prince's father, King Lane.
We'll soon become King Varian. King Lane fell with Stormwind.
This news of a single tragedy hit Arthas harder somehow than the thought of thousands of people suddenly rendered homeless. Arthas's own family was close-knit. He, his sister Calia, his mother Queen Lyanne, and of course King Taranis. He'd seen how some rulers behaved with their families, and knew that his was remarkable in the degree of closeness. To have lost your city, your way of life, and your father.
Poor Varian, he said, quick tears of sympathy coming to his eyes.
Uther patted his shoulder awkwardly.
Aye, he said. It is a dark day for the boy.
Arthas shivered suddenly, and not from the cold of a bright winter's day. The beautiful afternoon, with its blue sky and softly curving, snow-draped landscape, had suddenly darkened for him. A few days later, Arthas was standing up on the castle's ramparts, keeping Falric, one of the guards, company, and handing him a steaming hot mug of tea. Such a visit, like the ones Arthas paid to the Balnir family, and the castle's scullery maids and valets and blacksmiths and, indeed, nearly every underling on the royal grounds, was not unusual. Taranis always sighed, but Arthas knew that no one was ever punished for speaking with him, and indeed he sometimes wondered if his father secretly approved. Falric smiled gratefully and bowed deeply in genuine respect, pulling off his gauntlets so the mug would warm his cold hands. Snow threatened, and the sky was a pale gray, but thus far the weather was clear. Arthas leaned against the wall, resting his chin on his folded arms. He looked out over the rolling white hills of Tirisfal, down the road that led through Silverpine Forest to South Shore, the road along which Anduin Lothar, the mage Khadgar, and Prince Varian would be traveling.
Any sign of them?
Nay, your highness, Falric answered, sipping the hot beverage. It could be today, tomorrow, or the day after. If you're hoping to catch a glimpse, sir, you may be waiting a while.
Arthas shot him a grin, his eyes crinkling with mirth.
Better than lessons, he said. Well, sir, you'd know that better than I would, Falric said diplomatically, clearly fighting the impulse to grin back.
While the guard finished the tea, Arthas sighed and looked back down the road as he had a dozen times before. This had been exciting at first, but now he was becoming bored. He wanted to go back and find out how Brightmane's foal was, and began wondering how difficult it would be to slip away for a few hours and not be missed. Falric was right. Lothar and Varian might still be a few days away if... Arthas blinked. He slowly lifted his chin from his hands and narrowed his eyes.
They're coming, he cried, pointing.
Falric was at his side immediately, the mug forgotten. He nodded.
Sharp eyes, Prince Arthas. Marwyn, he called. Another soldier snapped to attention. Go tell the king that Lothar and Varian are on their way. They should be here within the hour.
Aye, captain, the younger man said, saluting.
I'll do it, I'll go,
said Arthas, already moving as he spoke. Marwyn hesitated, glancing back at his superior officer, but Arthas was determined to beat him. He raced down the steps, slipping on the ice and having to jump the rest of the way, and ran through the courtyard, skidding to a halt as he approached the throne room, and barely remembering to compose himself. Today was when Taranis met with representatives of the populace,
to listen to their concerns and do what he could to assist them. Arthas flipped back the hood of his beautifully embroidered red runecloth cape. He took a deep breath, letting it escape his lips as soft mist, and nodded as he approached the two guards, who saluted sharply, and turned to push open the doors for him. The throne room was significantly warmer than the outside courtyard, even though it was a large chamber formed of marble and stone with a high domed ceiling. Even on overcast days such as this one, the octagonal window at the apex of the dome let in plenty of natural light. Torches in their sconces burned steadily on the walls, adding both warmth and an orange tint to the room. An intricate design of circles enclosing the seal of Lordaeron graced the floor, hidden now by the gathering of people respectfully awaiting their turn to address their liege. Seated in the jeweled throne on a tiered dais was King Taranis II. His fair hair was touched with gray only at the temples, and his face was slightly lined, with more smile lines than the creased frowns that etched their marks on souls as well as visages. He wore a beautifully tailored robe in hues of blue and purple, wrought with gleaming gold embroidery that caught the torchlight and glinted off his crown. Taranis leaned forward slightly, engrossed in what the man who stood before him, a lesser noble whose name Arthas couldn't recall at the moment, was saying. His eyes, blue-green and intent, were focused on the man. For a moment, knowing whose coming he was about to announce, Arthas simply stood looking at his father. He, like Varian, was the son of a king, a prince of the blood. But Varian had no father, not anymore, and Arthas felt a lump rise in his throat at the thought of seeing that throne empty, of hearing the ancient song of coronation sung for him. By the light, please let that day be a long, long time away. Perhaps feeling the intensity of his son's gaze, Taranis glanced over at the door. His eyes crinkled in a smile for a moment, then he returned his attention to the petitioner. Arthas cleared his throat and stepped forward. Pardon the interruption. Father, they're coming. I saw them. They should be here within the hour. Taranis sobered slightly. He knew who they were. He nodded. Thank you, my son. Those assembled looked at one another. Most of them, too, knew who they were, and they moved as if to end the meeting. Taranis held up a hand. Nay, the weather holds, and the road is clear. They will arrive when they do, and not a moment before. Until then, let us continue. He smiled ruefully. I have a feeling that once they come, audiences such as this will need to be tabled. Let us finish as much business as we can before that moment. Arthas looked at his father with pride. This was why people loved Taranis so much, and why the king usually turned a blind eye to his son's adventuring among the common folk. Taranis cared deeply about the people he ruled, and had instilled that sentiment in his son. Shall I ride out to meet them, father? Taranis scrutinized his son for a moment, then shook his fair head. No. I think it best if you do not attend this meeting. Arthas felt like he'd been struck. Not attend? He was 9 years old. Something very bad had happened to an important ally, and a boy not much older than he had been rendered fatherless by it. He felt a sudden flash of anger. Why did his father insist on sheltering him so? Why was he not allowed to attend important meetings? He bit back the retort that would have sprung to his lips had he been alone with Taranis. It would not do to argue with his father here, in front of all these people. Even if he was totally and completely in the right on this. He took a deep breath, bowed, and left. An hour later, Arthas Menethil was safely ensconced in one of the many balconies that overlooked the throne room. He grinned to himself. He was still small enough to hide under the seats if anyone poked their nose in for a quick perusal. He fidgeted slightly, Another year or two, and he wouldn't be able to do this. But in a year or two, surely Father will understand that I deserve to be present at such events, and I won't have to hide. The thought pleased him. He rolled up his cloak and used it as a pillow while he waited. The room was warm from braziers, torches, and the heat of many bodies in a small space. The heat and the soothing murmur of voices and normal discussion lulled him, and he almost fell asleep.
"Your Majesty,"
the voice, powerful, resonant and strong, jerked Arthas awake.
"I am Anduin Lothar, a knight of Stormwind."
They were here. Lord Anduin Lothar, the one-time champion of Stormwind. Arthas edged out from under the seat and rose carefully, making sure he was hidden behind the blue curtain that draped the box, and peeked out. Lothar looked every inch the warrior, Arthas thought, as he regarded the man. Tall, powerfully built, he wore heavy armor with an ease that indicated he was well accustomed to its weight. Although his upper lip and jaw sported a thick mustache and short beard, his head was almost bald. What hair he had left had been tied back in a small ponytail. Beside him stood an old man in violet robes. Arthas's gaze fell on the boy, who could only be Prince Varian Wrynn. Tall, slender yet, but with broad shoulders that promised the slim frame would one day fill out, he looked pale and exhausted. Arthas winced as he regarded the youth, a few years older than he, looking lost, alone, and frightened. When addressed, Varian recovered and gave the polite, requisite replies. Terranus was an old hand at knowing how to make people feel comfortable. Quickly, he dismissed all but a few courtiers and guards and rose from his throne to greet the visitors.
"Please be seated," he said,
choosing not to sit in the glorious throne as was his right, but instead perching on the top stair of the dais. He drew Varian down beside him in a fatherly gesture. Arthas smiled. Hidden away, the young Prince of Lordaeron watched and listened closely, and the voices that floated up to him spoke words that sounded almost fanciful. Yet as he regarded this mighty warrior of Stormwind, and even more as he studied the wan visage of the future king of such a magnificent realm, Arthas realized with a creeping feeling that none of this was fantasy. All of it was deathly real, and it was terrifying. The men gathered spoke of creatures called orcs that had somehow infested Azeroth. Huge, green, with tusks for teeth and lusting for blood, they had formed a horde that flowed like a seemingly unstoppable tide.
"Enough to cover the land from shore to shore," Lothar said direly.
It was these monsters that had attacked Stormwind and made refugees, or corpses, Arthas realized, of its denizens. Things got heated when some courtier or other clearly didn't believe Lothar. Lothar's temper rose, but Terranus defused the situation and brought the meeting to a close.
"I will summon my neighboring kings," he said.
"These events concern us all.
Your Majesty, I offer you my home and my protection for as long as you shall need it."
Arthas smiled. Varian was going to stay here in the palace with him. It would be nice to have another noble boy to play with. He got along well enough with Calia, who was 2 years his elder, but, well, she was a girl. And while he was fond of Jerem, he knew that their opportunities to play together were perforce limited. Varian, however, was a prince of the blood just like Arthas, and they could spar together and ride and go exploring.
"You're telling us to prepare for war."
His father's voice cut in on his thoughts with brutal efficiency, and Arthas's mood grew somber again.
"Yes," Lothar replied, "a war for the very survival of our race."
Arthas swallowed hard, then left the viewing box as silently as he had come. As Arthas had expected, A short time later, Prince Varian was shown into the guest quarters. Terranus himself accompanied the boy, resting a hand gently on the youth's shoulder. If he was surprised to see his son waiting in the guest quarters, he did not show it.
Arthas. This is Prince Varian Rin, future king of Stormwind.
Arthas bowed to his equal.
Your Highness, he said formally, I bid you welcome to Lordaeron. I only wish the circumstances were happier.
Varian returned the bow gracefully.
As I told King Terranus, I am grateful for your support and friendship during these difficult times.
His voice was stiff, strained, weary. Arthas took in the cape, tunic, and breeches, made of rune cloth and mage weave and beautifully embroidered. It looked as though Varian had been wearing them for half his life, so dirty were they. His face had clearly been scrubbed, but there were traces of dirt at his temples and beneath his nails.
I will send up some servants shortly, with some food and towels, hot water and a tub, so that you may refresh yourself, Prince Varian.
Terranus continued to use the boy's title. That would wear off with time, but Arthas understood why the king emphasized it now. Varian needed to keep hearing that he was still respected, still royal, when he had lost absolutely everything but his life. Varian pressed his lips together and nodded.
Thank you, he managed. Arthas, I leave him in your care.
Terranus squeezed Varian's shoulder reassuringly, then departed, closing the door. The two boys stared at each other. Arthas's mind was a total blank. The silence stretched uncomfortably. Finally, Arthas blurted,
I'm sorry about your father.
Varian winced and turned away, walking toward the huge windows that overlooked Lordaemir Lake. The snow that had been threatening all morning was finally coming, drifting softly downward to cover the land with a silent blanket. It was too bad. On a clear day, you could see all the way to Fenris Keep.
Thank you.
I'm sure he died fighting nobly and gave as good as he got.
He was assassinated.
Varian's voice was blunt and emotionless. Arthas whirled to look at him, shocked. His features, in profile to Arthas now, and lit by the cold light of a winter's day, were unnaturally composed. Only his eyes, bloodshot and brown, and filled with pain, seemed alive.
A trusted friend managed to get him to speak with her alone. Then she killed him. Stabbed him, right in the heart.
Arthas stared. Death in glorious battle was difficult enough to handle, but this?
Impulsively, he placed a hand on the other prince's arm. I saw a foal being born yesterday, he said.
It sounded inane, but it was the first thing that sprang to his mind, and he spoke earnestly.
When the weather lets up, I'll take you to see him. He's the most amazing thing.
Varian turned toward him and gazed at him for a long moment. Emotions flitted across his face.
Offense? Disbelief?
Gratitude, yearning, understanding. Suddenly, the brown eyes filled with tears, and Varian looked away. He folded his arms and hunched in on himself, his shoulders shaking with sobs he did his best to muffle. They came out, anyway, harsh, racking sounds of mourning for a father, a kingdom, a way of life, that he probably hadn't been able to grieve until this precise minute. Arthas squeezed his arm and felt it rigid as stone beneath his fingers.
I hate winter,
Varian sobbed, and the depth of the hurt conveyed by those three simple words, a seeming non sequitur, humbled Arthas. Unable to watch such raw pain, yet powerless to do anything about it, he dropped his hand, turned away, and stared out the window. Outside, the snow continued to fall. Chapter 2 Arthas was frustrated. He thought when word had come about the orcs that he'd finally begin serious training, perhaps alongside his new best friend Varian. Instead, exactly the opposite happened. The war against the Horde resulted in everyone who could swing a sword joining the armed forces, right down to the master blacksmith. Varian took pity on his younger counterpart and did what he could for a while, until at last he sighed and looked sympathetically at Arthas.
"Arthas, I don't want to sound mean, but I'm terrible," Varian grimaced.
The two were in the armory hall, sparring with helms, leather chest pieces, and wooden training swords. Varian went to the rack and hung up the training sword, removing his helm as he spoke.
"I'm just surprised, because you're athletic and fast."
Arthas sulked. He knew Varian well enough to know that the older prince was trying to soften the blow. He followed sullenly, hanging up his own sword and unfastening his protective gear. "In Stormwind, we start training when we're quite young. By the time I was your age, I had my own set of armor specifically designed for me."
"Don't rub it in," Arthas grumbled.
"Sorry." Varian grinned at him, and Arthas reluctantly gave a small smile back. Although their first meeting had been laced with grief and awkwardness, Arthas had discovered that Varian had a strong spirit and a generally optimistic outlook.
"I just wonder why your father didn't do the same for you."
Arthas knew.
"He's trying to protect me."
Varian sobered as he hung up his leather chest piece. "My father tried to protect me, too. Didn't work. The realities of life have a way of intruding." He looked at Arthas.
"I'm trained to fight. I'm not trained to teach fighting. I might hurt you."
Arthas flushed. No suggestion that Arthas might hurt him. Varian seemed to see that he was only digging himself deeper into a hole with the younger boy and clapped him on the shoulder.
"Tell you what, when the war's over and a proper trainer can be spared again, I'll come with you to talk to King Tyrannus. I'm sure you'll be handing me my rear in no time."
The war eventually did end, and the Alliance was triumphant. The leader of the Horde, the once mighty Orgrim Doomhammer, had been brought back to Capital City in chains. It had made a big impression on both Arthas and Varian to see the powerful orc paraded through Lordaeron. Tyrallian, the young paladin lieutenant who had defeated Doomhammer after the orc had slain the noble Anduin Lothar, had shown mercy in choosing to spare the beast. Tyrannus, who was at heart a kindly man, continued in that fashion by forbidding attacks on the creature. Jeers, boos, yes. Seeing the orc who had terrorized them for so long now powerless, an object of scorn and derision, heartened morale. But Orgrim Doomhammer would not be harmed while in his care. It was the only time Arthas had seen Varian's face ugly with hate, and he supposed he could not blame the other boy. If orcs had murdered Tyrannus and Uther, he supposed he'd want to spit on the ugly green things, too.
"He should be killed," Varian growled, his eyes angry, as they watched from the parapets as Doomhammer was marched toward the palace. "And I wish I could be the one to do it."
"He's going to the Undercity," said Arthas.
The ancient royal crypts, dungeons, sewers, and twining alleys deep below the palace had somehow gotten that nickname, as if the place was simply another destination. Dark, dank, filthy. The Undercity was intended only for prisoners or the dead, but the poorest of the poor in the land somehow always seemed to find their way in. If one was homeless, it was better than freezing in the elements, and if one needed something not entirely legal, even Arthas understood that that was where you went to get it. Now and then, the guards would go down and make a sweep of the place in a desperate and ultimately futile attempt to clean it out.
"No one ever gets out from the Undercity," Arthas reassured his friend. "He'll die in captivity."
"Too good for him," Varian said. "Tyrallian should have killed him when he had the chance."
Varian's words were prophetic. The great orcish leader had only appeared to be humbled by the scorn and hatred heaped upon him. It turned out he was far from broken. Lured by his dispiritedness, or so Arthas gleaned by eavesdropping,
the guards had grown lax in their care of him. No one was quite sure how Orgrim Doomhammer's escape had been engineered, because no one survived to report on it. Every guard he encountered had gotten his neck broken. But there was a trail of bodies, that of guards, indigents, and criminals. Doomhammer did not discriminate, leading from the wide-open cell through the Undercity to the single escape route, the foul-smelling sewers. Doomhammer was captured again shortly thereafter, and this time placed in the internment camps. When he escaped from there, too, the Alliance collectively held its breath, waiting for a renewed attack. None came. Either Doomhammer was finally dead, or they had shattered his fighting spirit, after all. 2 years had come and gone, and now it looked like the dark portal through which the Horde had entered Azeroth the first time, the portal that the Alliance had shut down at the end of the Second War, was going to be reopened. Or had already been reopened, Arthas wasn't sure which, because nobody apparently seemed to want to bother to tell him anything, even though he was going to become king one day. It was a beautiful day, sunny and clear and warm. Part of him wanted to be outside with his new horse, whom he had named Invincible, the same foal he had seen being born on that bitter winter day 2 years ago. Maybe he'd do that later. But for now, his footsteps took him to the armory, where he and Varian had sparred, and Varian had embarrassed him. The slight was unintended, to be sure, but it stung all the same. 2 years. Arthas walked over to the rack of wooden training swords and took one down. At 11, he had had what his governess called a growth spurt. At least, she'd called it that the last time he had seen her, when she wept and hugged him and declared him a proper young man now, and no longer in need of a governess. The little sword he had trained with at 9 was a child's sword. He was indeed a proper young man, standing at 5'8" and likely to grow even taller if his heritage was any indication. He hefted the sword, swinging it this way and that, and suddenly grinned. He advanced on one of the old suits of armor, gripping the sword firmly. "Hoi!" he called, wishing it was one of the disgusting green monsters that had been such a thorn in his father's side for so long. He drew himself up to his full height and lifted the tip of the sword to the suit of armor's throat. "Think you to pass here, vile orc? You are in Alliance lands. I will show you mercy this once. Begone, and never return." Ah, but orcs didn't understand surrender or honor. They were just brutes. So it would refuse to kneel and show him respect. "What? You will not depart? I have given you a chance, but now we fight!" And he lunged, as he had seen Varian do. Not directly at the armor, no. The thing was very old and very valuable, but right beside it. Strike. Block. Duck in under the swing. Bring the sword all the way across the body. Then whirl and... He gasped, as the sword seemed to take on a life of its own and flew across the room. It landed loudly on the marble floor, sliding along with a grating sound, before slowly spinning to a stop. "Damn it!" He looked toward the door, and right into the face of Muradin Bronzebeard. Muradin was the dwarven ambassador to Lordaeron, brother to King Magni Bronzebeard, and a great favorite at court, for his jovial, no-nonsense approach to everything from fine ale and pastries to matters of state. He had a reputation as an excellent warrior as well, cunning and fierce in battle. And he had just watched the future king of Lordaeron pretend to fight orcs and throw his sword clear across the room. Arthas felt his whole body break out in the sweat, and he knew his cheeks were pink. He tried to recover. "Ambassador, I was just..." The dwarf coughed and looked away. "I'm looking for your father, boy. Can you direct me? This infernal place has too many turns." Arthas mutely pointed to a stairway on his left. He watched the dwarf go. No other words were exchanged. Arthas had never been more embarrassed in his life.
tears of shame burned in his eyes, and he blinked them back hard. Without even bothering to put away the wooden sword, he fled the room. 10 minutes later, he was free, riding out of the stables and heading east into the hills of Tearsfall Glades. He had 2 horses with him, a gentle, elderly dapple-gray gelding called Trueheart, upon which he was mounted, and, on a training lead, the 2-year-old colt, Invincible. He'd felt the bond between them from the moment they had locked eyes, moments after the foal's birth. Arthas had known then that this would be his steed, his friend, the great horse with a great heart, who would be as much a part of him as, no, more than, his armor or weapons. Horses from good stock such as this one could live 20 years or more if cared for well. This was the mount who would bear Arthas elegantly in ceremony and faithfully on daily rides. He was not a warhorse. Such were a breed apart, used only for specific purposes at specific times. He'd have one when he went into battle, but Invincible would, and indeed already had, become part of his life. The stallion's coat, mane, and tail, gray at his birth, had turned white as the snow that had coated the ground on that day. It was a color that was rare even among the Balnir-bred horses, whose white coats were really mostly just light gray. Arthas had toyed with names like Snowfall or Starlight, but in the end, he followed the informal tradition of Lordaeron knights and gave his steed the name of Equality. Uther's mount was Steadfast, Taranis's Courageous, his was Invincible. Arthas wanted desperately to ride Invincible, but the horse master warned that 2 years old was at least a year too young. "Two's a baby," he'd said. "They're still growing. Their bones are still forming. Be patient, Your Highness. Another year isn't that long to wait for a horse that'll serve you well for 2 decades. But it was a long time to wait. Too long. Arthas glanced back over his shoulder at the horse, growing impatient with the plodding canter that seemed the most that Trueheart could summon. In contrast with the elderly gelding, the 2-year-old moved almost as if floating, with hardly any effort. His ears were pricked forward, and his nostrils flared as he scented the smells of the glade. His eyes were bright, and he seemed to be saying, "Come on, Arthas. It's what I was born for." Surely one ride couldn't hurt. Just a little canter, and then back to the stables as if nothing had happened. He slowed Trueheart to a walk and tied the reins to a low-slung tree branch. Invincible whickered as Arthas walked up to him. The prince grinned at the velvety softness of the muzzle brushing his palm as he fed the horse a piece of apple. Invincible was used to having a saddle. It was part of the slow and patient breaking process to get the horse accustomed to having something on its back. But an empty saddle was much different from a live human being. Still, he'd spent a lot of time with the animal. Arthas said a short prayer, and then quickly, before Invincible could sidestep out of the way, vaulted onto the horse's back. Invincible reared, neighing furiously. Arthas wrapped his hands in the wiry mane and clung like a burr with every inch of his long legs. The horse hopped and bucked, but Arthas held on. He yelped as Invincible tried to scrape him off by running beneath one of the branches, but did not let go. And then Invincible was galloping. Or rather, he was flying. Or at least so it seemed to the giddy young prince, who crouched low on the horse's neck and grinned widely. He'd never been on an animal this fast before, and his heart pounded with excitement. He didn't even try to control Invincible. It was all he could do to simply hang on. It was glorious, wild, beautiful. Everything he'd dreamed of. They would... Before he even realized what had happened, Arthas was hurtling through the air to land hard on the grassy earth. For a long moment, he couldn't breathe from the impact. Slowly, he got to his feet. His body ached, but nothing was broken. But Invincible was a rapidly disappearing dot in the distance, Arthas swore violently, kicking a hillock and bawling his fists. He was in for it now. Sir Uther, the Lightbringer, was waiting for him upon his return. Arthas grimaced as he slid off Trueheart and handed the reins to a groomsman. Invincible came back a short time ago by himself. He had a nasty cut on his leg, but I'm sure you'll be glad to know the horsemaster says he'll be fine.
Arthas debated lying, telling Uther they'd been spooked and Invincible had fled.
But it was obvious from the grass stains on his clothes that he'd fallen, and Uther would never believe that the prince couldn't stay on gentle old Trueheart, spooked or not.
You know you were not supposed to ride him yet, Uther continued inexorably.
Arthas sighed. I know.
Arthas, do you not understand? If you put too much pressure on him at this age, he... I get it, all right? I could cripple him. It was just the one time.
And that's all it will be, isn't it?
Yes, sir, Arthas said sullenly. You missed your lessons again.
Arthas was silent and did not look up at Uther. He was angry, embarrassed, and hurting, and wanted nothing more than a hot bath and some briarthorn tea to ease the pain. His right knee was starting to swell.
At least you are in time for the prayer session this afternoon.
Uther eyed him up and down.
Though you'll need to wash up.
Arthas was indeed sweaty and knew he smelled like horse. It was a good smell, he thought. An honest one.
Hurry up. We'll be assembling in the chapel.
Arthas wasn't even sure what the prayer session was focusing on today. He felt vaguely bad about that. The light was important to both his father and Uther, and he knew that they badly wanted him to be as devout as they were. But while he couldn't argue with the evidence of his own eyes, the light was most definitely real. He'd seen priests and the new order of the paladins work true miracles with healing and protection. He'd never felt called to sit and meditate for hours as Uther did, or make frequent references in reverent tones, as did his father. It was just there. An hour later, scrubbed and changed into an outfit that was simple yet elegant, Arthas hurried to the small family chapel in the royal wing. It was not a large room, but it was beautiful. It was a miniature version of the traditional chapel style that could be seen in every human town. Perhaps a trifle more lavish with regard to the details. The chalice that was shared was finely wrought of gold and inlaid with gems, the table upon which it lay an antique. Even the benches had comfortable padding, while the common folk had to make do with flat wooden ones. He realized, as he entered quietly, that he was the last, and winced as he recalled that several important personages were visiting his father. In addition to the regular attendees, his family, Uther and Muradin, King Trollbane was present, though he looked even less happy than Arthas to be here. And someone else. A girl. Slender and straight, with long blonde hair, her back turned to him. Arthas peered at her, curious, and bumped into one of the benches. He might as well have dropped a plate. Queen Leanne, still a beauty in her early 50s, turned at the sound, smiling affectionately at her son. Her gown was perfectly arranged, her hair pulled back in a golden coif from which no unruly tendril escaped. Callia, 14 and looking as gawky and coltish as Invincible had been at his birth, shot him a scowl. Evidently, word of his misdeeds had gotten out, or else she was just angry with him at being late. Tyrannus nodded at him, then returned his eyes to the bishop giving the service. Arthas cringed inwardly at the quiet disapproval in that gaze. Trollbane paid him no mind, and Muradin, too, did not turn. Arthas slouched down onto one of the benches against the back wall. The bishop began to speak and lifted his hands, limned with a soft, white radiance. Arthas wished the girl would turn a little so he could catch a glimpse of her face. Who was she? Obviously, the daughter of a noble or someone else of high rank, else she would not be invited to attend private family services. He thought about who she might be, more interested in discovering her identity than in the words of the service.
"And His Royal Highness, Arthas Menethil," intoned the bishop. Arthas jerked to attention.